Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to welcome today Roger Reynolds to the microphone. He is an innovative garden educator. His focus is on sustainable and low-maintenance gardens, and he has a consulting firm. It's called Infiltrating Landscapes, and we have a link to that on our website. He lives in Lone Rock, Wisconsin, and so he's a state person who knows a lot about our state and probably can tell you a whole lot about your garden or answer a lot of questions about your garden and mine. So I'm glad to have him along. And certainly if you have questions or comments for him as we move along or maybe some techniques of your own to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post a photo or question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And as a matter of fact, today of all days, if you're near your computer, please go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Roger has posted a number of great photos, and there are things that we're going to be talking about as the show goes along. So I hope you'll go to that page. You don't have to be join Facebook. I want to remind you that if you're not a member of Facebook, you don't have to join Facebook to go to the page. But to contribute, you do have to like the page. So there you go. And Roger, great Hello. To have you along.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, man, it's great. And I'm telling you, I've got so enthused just looking at the photographs that you posted on our Facebook page. I thought we could talk about every one of these on the show.
Yeah. Well, that's what part of my goal is, to get people enthused, because I don't always say it, but really I'm an environmental activist. Mm-hmm. But instead of telling people what they shouldn't do or can't do, I want to tell people what they can do. Mm-hmm. And I want them to see that it's easy, fun, and beautiful.
Well, it certainly looks fun and looks beautiful. The easy part, maybe people will have to be convinced of that.
Right. Well, and that's the whole low maintenance sustainable. That's what whether it's easy or not is. I was thinking about this on the drive in. And when we talk about low maintenance, people typically garden. And, you know, we've learned from our parents or our grandparents or people on your show or mm-hmm. wherever people learn from TV shows, whatever. But I just wanted to talk about low maintenance. There are so many jobs in the garden that people just accept. Like, you have to buy a tiller. You know, people just think that's what you have to do. So to talk about low maintenance, I just want to talk about some of the things that we typically do if we have a garden. As you know, there's usually fall or spring cleanup. Then we'll have to, if we're doing annuals, we have to till the soil, work the soil. Then we'll plant, then we do some weeding, then we might water, and we do some weeding, then we might do some fertilizing, and we do some weeding, and then we'll maybe some disease or pest control, and some weeding, and then there's a harvest, and some more weeding.
Notice, that weeding came in a lot.
Yes. And so we can't really stop plant. We need to plant, and we need to harvest. But we can, with low maintenance and with mulch, we can reduce the cleanup, we can reduce the weeding, we can reduce the tilling, we can reduce the fertilizing, I think I said the watering, we can affect plant and disease and pest stuff with mulching, and of course then we have to harvest, but our harvest is often bigger.
And that's the fun part.
Right.
Harvesting is fun.
Yes, exactly, yes. So when we look at low maintenance, the first thing I want people to do, and the first thing I do, is anytime you have a garden, whether it's perennials or annuals or vegetables, get it mulched.
Mm-hmm. Get it mulched.
Yep.
Well, that's a good way to kick things off. And you actually have some workshops. I'm going to go to the phones here in a minute. Diane, we'll get to you in just a second. But you have some workshops coming up, and a lot of that gets covered in those workshops, is it not?
Exactly. Yep. I do a variety of workshops. I'm presenting a number of things at the Garden Expo. And then I'm also presenting a couple different workshops at Olbrich Gardens, one on growing microgreens and sprouts. That's also at the Garden Expo. And another one at the Garden Expo, at Olbrich, which will be fun with fencing. So it's how to keep wildlife out of the garden, but not have the fence just be ugly and in your face.
Okay.
But those are both short ones, but I'm doing a full day workshop from 9 to 4 at Olbrich Gardens, March 3rd. And that one, It's really a whole kind of gardening philosophy. So I call it low maintenance, sustainable gardening, including edibles. And that day, we'll start off talking about mulch and all the things mulch does that's good. Then we'll talk a little bit about composting. Then that leads right into lasagna gardening. And to me, lasagna gardening, then people, if you want to grow vegetables, and then we'll talk a bit about how mulch helps prevent tomato blight.
Mm-hmm.
Take a break for lunch. And then when you start to put all these ideas together and you're no longer tilling and you no longer have much weed control, you no longer have to plant in rows. And so then you can start planting the food garden or the flower garden in any design that you want. You can do clusters and groups and quit doing rows and start to make it a design. So after lunch, we'll talk about edible landscaping and organic by design, not neglect.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, that sounds exciting. Can people still, is it full or can people still get involved?
Still can get involved. There's a link on my website, infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com, which is, you can, if you go down past all the pictures on your Facebook page, you can jump over there. Mm-hmm. Or you can just go to the Olbrich site, Education for Adults, and it's listed there.
Okay. And again, the date on that is?
The date is March 3rd. It's a Saturday from 9 to 4.
Oh, perfect. Roger Reynolds, our guest today, garden educator extraordinaire. His consulting firm is in Infiltrating Landscapes, as he said, from Lone Rock, Wisconsin, talking with him about low maintenance and sustainable gardening. And looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. You can post a comment there. And let's go to Diane in Plymouth. Thanks for waiting, Diane.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about compost piles. We have to move ours, and I was wondering where is the best location as far as the amount of sun, or we were thinking about putting it on the west side of a detached garage we have, and I was just wondering what's the best location.
Well, the very best location, in my opinion, would be someplace in the shade.
Okay.
Because if, I don't know how you've done your compost pile before, but if you do composting well, where you're putting layers of carbon and layers of nitrogen in alternating, and you get a compost pile that's heating, the biggest maintenance work you'll have of that compost pile is actually adding moisture. Because when the microbes are working well, they're giving off heat and they're giving off the moisture of the pile. So then you put it in the shade.
Oh, okay. All right.
So someplace near where you can hose it down from time to time.
Right, where you can get some water to it. But if you have it in the shade, it doesn't dry out so much from the sun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. And when you say layering again, you mentioned carbon, and so maybe go into a little bit more detail.
All right. Well, I have a lot of, if people go to my website, not right now, but sometime, I have a lot of my handouts there that people can download for free.
Yeah.
And so typically when people put stuff in the compost, what people are generally putting in compost, unless they're really actively composting, it's either kitchen scraps, which are a nitrogen component,
mm-hmm.
or weeds that they're pulled from their garden, from their landscape. Those are the two things that people, and of course in the fall, they'll get a bunch of leaves. But if the nitrogen thing, some of the keys ideas I like to help people remember to help tell nitrogen from carbon is nitrogen things they're usually wet, they're usually green, they'll usually get stinky if they're left sit around,
mm-hmm.
and they'll usually attract animals to eat them. So kitchen scraps are right in there. Things that those were nitrogen things. Things that are carbon, they're usually brown, they're usually dry. You usually could start them on fire, they're usually burnable. And they also don't usually attract animals to eat them. When you put a pile, when you put your garbage out at the curb for it to be picked up, raccoons get into it. You put a pile of newspapers out, nobody cares. So when you put some nitrogen stuff in the compost pile, that's what animals want to come to. So if you have a pile of leaves or some shredded newspaper, some of those dry brown ingredients, put those on top. You'll automatically start your layers, but you also will help prevent insects and animals wanting to be in your compost pile.
There you go. Sue and Nina, it's on to you now. Hi, Sue.
Hi. We started a community garden. Well, it's been going for a few years, but I started out in the garden last year and had my first lasagna garden. put a lot of work into it, and I'm wondering how to sustain that type of garden on a year-to-year basis. I did put down the wood chips on the bottom, and then we have a mixture of horse manure and dried leaves from our city to build the organic section of it. So how do I maintain that?
Okay, so you said you put wood chips at the bottom. Did you put cardboard or newspaper as a smother layer?
Yeah, cardboard. Oh, okay. I put a heavy cardboard at the very base,
yep,
and built up from there, and then put the maybe about a foot of wood chips, and then built up my rows and things on that.
Okay.
And had a fairly decent crop for the first year, too.
Okay. So you did this, you installed this last spring and grew through the growing season?
Yes.
Okay. I don't recommend usually like a foot of wood chips. That's a lot of carbon material. But as long as you had a lot of nitrogen and carbon mixed on top of that, that's where most of your root stuff was happening.
My section of the garden was in a low spot, and it was in water.
Oh, then you made an excellent choice. I compliment you. That got you out of the water problem, didn't it?
It did. I was able to walk through my garden all summer.
I hadn't thought of that. That's a fantastic solution to that heavy, wet spot. So your wood chips are going to break down slowly, which will keep you out of that water for a couple years. So I don't know if you did anything in the fall or spring, but what you'll do once things have thawed out, and you're not going to work the garden this time, but that you want things to thaw out, and then you're just going to basically get about another foot of mulch on top of your dead plant material. So you don't have to take anything out. You're just going to bury everything under new mulch that's about a foot deep, and that buries all your disease problems and a lot of the insects. Now, overwintering insects, they do different things, but the blight and those spores, when they're buried under a new foot of mulch, you're basically at a clean slate.
Hmm.
Okay, now I'm also part of a group of 13 people who are doing a test of taking the organic materials out of two businesses in our area, and they drop it off at a compost site for us throughout the winter, and we're building our own compost, so in springtime we get to use that. I'm assuming I can, after I put the mulch on top, I can add the compost to that, and that'll be my organic material that I'm building into?
Yep, we'll do it in layers, and so that compost will be a great ingredient. The thing that I so the whole idea of lasagna gardening is that you're building the garden deep mulch bed like building layers of lasagna. So do some compost, do some leaves, do some compost, do some old hay or newspaper, build it in layers. The thing that I recommend people though is that very top layer, you want that not to be compost. You want that to be coarse. And whether that's leaves that aren't chopped or some hay or some straw or even a couple inches of wood chips, you want it coarse because when it's coarse, you won't have weed seed germination.
Mm.
Then how do I grow? Where do I put my seeds into?
Oh, well, you put your seeds. If you go to my website and pull down the Lasagna Garden handout, it talks about how to plant seeds. You actually plant seeds. You dig a little trench in that top layer, just like you were digging a trench in soil. Mm-hmm. Then you put a little bit of soil or seed starting mix or some fine particle stuff in that trench. Plant, so just a trench that's 2 to 4 inches deep down to where it's moist. Put some fine particle material in there, an inch deep, a couple inches wide. Put your seeds in that, put a little bit more on top, and then leave that open for the seeds to come up. That's how we get almost no weeding in a lasagna garden. If you have the compost on top, you'll probably get some weed seed germination.
Last year, I didn't even have a ice cream bucket of weeds for my whole garden.
And yeah. Was it this compost that was on top?
It was a mixture of the lasagna gardening. I didn't have a lot of compost to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
And then as the year went by, I was making compost in my home garden and taking out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it's great to hear that you didn't have weeds because that makes gardening so much more fun when, you know, you spend 2 to 5 minutes a year weeding.
It sure does. Thank you so much for calling. So appreciate it. Roger Reynolds, our guest today. Gardening educator, and his consulting firm is Infiltrating Landscapes. Our guest here on Garden Talk, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on this edition of Garden Talk. We visit with Roger Reynolds of the consulting firm Infiltrating Landscapes. a very innovative gardening educator, and we're talking primarily on low maintenance and sustainable gardening with him today. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you want to post a photo or a question, go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and you can post right there. We'd love to hear from you. And Siobhan in Herbster up next with a comment. So let's go there. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi. I recently moved to Herbster and found that I can't compost because of the bears outside compost. So I was considering the worm composting inside, and I'm just wondering about possible smell and whatnot, how effective it is.
It's very effective. It doesn't have smell unless you do it wrong.
Okay.
My website, and I also teach this, and I have a handout there about making your own bins out of 14-gallon Rubbermaid storage containers.
Oh, okay.
My website is infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot. That's blogspot.com.
Great.
And the way that you don't have smell is because the bin is mostly filled with peat moss or shredded newspaper. That's a carbon ingredient. And then whenever you add your food scraps, you bury them at least 2 inches deep.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're
thanks
welcome.
A lot for calling.
Good luck.
Appreciate that call. And we have a Facebook question, actually from the folks at the UW Extension Learning Store. Comment is, mulching is great for weed control, but I've heard it can alter the soil pH or otherwise affect plants. Is that true?
Well, this is an interesting point, and it's not the same, but it's related to that. Will mulch deplete carbon? Will mulch deplete nitrogen from the soil? And in the last year, I got a research paper from a professor out in Washington, and I have this at home, and I'll have to ask her permission if I can post it to my website. But she did a thorough evaluation of scientific research from about World War II forward on mulch. And this paper, I love it because two things that she addresses in there. One is, will mulching change the pH of the soil? So, because we'll hear different times, you know, if you got blueberries, put pine needles around them and things mm-hmm. like that. Well, what they found out is it doesn't change the soil. what doesn't change the pH of the soil? Because what's happening when you put that mulch on top of the soil and you're not incorporating it,
right?
It's basically a slow compost. It's the things we mulch with: wood chips, pine needles, branches, straw. Those things are usually more higher in carbon, so they break down slowly. But you're not incorporating them, so as they're breaking down on the soil surface, they're actually becoming pretty much neutral pH. And back to the does mulch deplete nitrogen from the soil? In this same research paper, she found out yes, it does, but less than 1 centimeter deep.
Oh,
so
man.
Basically, it does not affect the nitrogen.
Oh, very interesting, very interesting. I'd like to see that.
I'll get you that.
Yeah, I'd love to. Put it up on your Facebook page at least, or shoot it to me, because I'd love to see it. Maybe have that person on the show sometime.
Yeah.
David in Campbellsport, on to you. Thanks for calling, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think your last comment addressed one of my questions was, should you add ammonium sulfate to wood chips or bark to help add nitrogen, or would that accelerate decomposition and defeat the purpose of the mulch? And then another one was, as far as the lasagna structure, I put corn stalks on top of the leaves to hold the leaves from blowing around and to trap additional leaves that are blowing around. So do you have a comment regarding adding nitrogen to especially wood chips?
Right. If you want them to break down, that will do it. But if you don't want them to break down, don't add nitrogen to them.
I see. That makes sense.
Yep. It's all about feeding the microbes do all the work. And if you give them a balanced diet, this was what we try to do in a compost pile. So basically, I kind of equate nitrogen to meat and carbon or carbohydrates to potatoes. Mm. So if you give them meat and potatoes, they're really happy.
Oh,
there you go.
And regarding corn stalks on top, that's a fine cover. Like I said just a bit ago, is that top layer have it coarse. Now, you'll need to dig through that to plant things, but that is a top layer. The corn stalks will be should work just fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then just one more thing about, you said you can address the blight issues by putting, did you say a foot of compost? I used a couple inches of mushroom compost that was sterile. And I thought that would address the issue, but it didn't do that. No. Maybe it wasn't thick enough.
Right. It's not compost specifically, but mulch.
I see.
Most of the blights that attack tomatoes are soil-borne, and they can overwinter in the soil. Some of them overwinter alone in the soil, and some of them in plant material in the soil. Now, UV light and drying out will destroy them. But in the spring, when you have a bare soil garden, you till. So basically, those spores that were in storage through the winter, you bring them up to the surface, and then they get onto our soil, onto our plants from watering or rain, and it splashes the blight spores onto the plant tissue, the leaf and stem tissue, and that's how they start to infect the tomatoes. So if we put a layer of mulch 2 to 4 inches deep over the soil, that prevents those spores from being splashed up onto the tomato plant.
Oh, that sounds really good. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Cindy and McGregor, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I had two questions.
Okay.
The first one is, when we rake our yard, we have a ton of walnut trees, and so I worry about incorporating the walnut leaves into compost, if that would have a detrimental effect. And then also I wondered about, you like to use newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering about if there's any effect from the metallic inks in the newspapers as compared to soy-based inks.
All right, both good questions. If you want to grow tomatoes or peppers or a whole lot of other things, don't put walnut leaves or walnuts in your compost. Now,
okay.
There are some good references. Johansson's Garden Center on their website used to, I haven't checked lately, they used to have a really good list of things that are tolerant of walnut. I think UW Extension also has, but if you do some research on the internet, there's things that are tolerant of walnut. I'm always trying to not have things go to the landfill.
Okay.
And so, well, of course, most of our municipalities now are composting, but you could do two separate compost piles, the walnut leaves and walnut stuff in one that you would only use in certain places, and then your other compost in another place, or that you can use in other places.
Sometimes in flowers, the walnut leaves, there are certain flowers that are, there are more flowers that are tolerant than
and the
vegetables.
The bramble fruits, raspberries, blackberries, they're tolerant of walnuts.
Yeah.
And we know things are tolerant, can tolerate walnuts, because when we drive around the land, when we drive around, we don't see walnut trees with only bare spots underneath them.
Right.
So something grows there. And then newspaper. I recommend not using glossy. So I don't use any glossy stuff. I haven't done really in-depth research, but most of our newspapers now, I think, are printed with the black and white are printed with more soy-based inks. And also, the reason that we have more color in the newspaper is because it got less expensive. And I think that's because they're able to use the soy-based and not the toxic heavy metals, because those are more expensive. But I try to use, you can't get away from color, but I only use not glossy newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And now here's a nice Facebook comment from... Let's see. Nancy, we were thrilled at Boscobel Schools to have Roger come and help us with our garden at our school forest. I applied the deep mulch techniques at my house as well. We have the most amazing weed-free no-till garden at both places. 7-foot tomato plants and so many blight-free huge tomatoes. Thanks, Roger. We've doubled the space at both places, and I can hardly wait to plant this spring.
Very good. Thanks, Nancy. After the show, I'll put up a couple of pictures of the Boscobel school garden. I worked there this year to help them. And it's out at their school forest, 7 miles out of town. It's in an old farm. So their garden is tilled fallow hayfield or fallow grassland. So it's full of quackgrass. And I took a couple pictures there this summer where there's the portion that's lasagna garden and no quackgrass and pretty much weed free. And then there's the other part that looks like a hayfield.
Well, that is really, really, really wonderful. And we had Esty said, I'm an experienced gardener. This is on Facebook, and yeah, only want to learn about lasagna gardening. Are you going to give a talk about that anytime soon? And, yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about your workshops and so forth, and I'm not sure if lasagna gardening was – yeah, there was some, wasn't there?
Yep, at that day-long March 3rd at Obrick Gardens, lasagna gardening will be part of it, and that will be that, – that's that. But if you – she said – so now I understand her comment. She only wants to learn about lasagna gardening. I don't know where she's from, but at Garden Expo on Saturday, I'll be talking about lasagna gardening, I think, at 1 o'clock in Westby. So I'll just go through a couple other places where I'm doing some education. Westby, February 25th, through the thrift store there. It's a thrift store and food pantry. We're doing a lasagna garden workshop there and expanding their garden. I can't remember the name of it. And then... in Monroe, Wisconsin, Saturday, March 10th, I'll be presenting lasagna gardening there at their garden, their day of garden stuff. And in Elroy, April 14th, no, I think it's the 21st. Anyway, it's mid to late April. At Elroy, we'll actually be doing a presentation and an installation workshop there. And if you go to my website, which is infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com, go down the blog a little bit, and I have a list there of all my upcoming speaking engagements.
And if you didn't get that address down, just go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and I have that referenced right after several of Roger's photos, which are great. You want to see those anyway. So go to the Facebook page. You'll see the great photos of sustainable gardening. And then you can get that website address, too. We have Phil, who said, I spoke to a director of a public garden in Memphis, Tennessee, yesterday. Every spring on April 2nd, they have a tulip festival. As of yesterday, February 2nd, the tulips had begun flowering. I guess somebody needed to get the groundhog a pair of correcting lenses. Yeah, there you go. Well, I guess Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, so he said 6 more weeks.
Well, he's not in Tennessee.
No, he's not in Tennessee, is he? Yeah. Let's go to Jane in Fitchburg. Hi, Jane. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You know, I was just talking with the producer when you were talking about the newsprint in the garden.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear what you said about the colored ink.
Well,
I know you said the black and white ink was mostly soy-based, and that wasn't harmful.
Right. So what I really stay away from in the newspaper section is the glossy stuff.
Yes.
And so the regular newspaper, now there's a lot more color in that. But my understanding is because that colors doesn't have the same heavy metals that's in the glossy section. And it's pretty hard to get newspaper now that doesn't have some color ink in it, but don't use the glossies.
Okay. Well, my technique, and I never weed my garden, okay, and I don't have weeds, mm-hmm, is that after I put in my plants and my seeds, I cover the whole thing with about 4 layers of newspaper, mm-hmm, and then I go and mow the lawn. And I put all the grass clippings on top of the newspaper to hold the newspaper in place, and every year that just works into the soil and adds organic matter, and I just don't ever have the, well, there's one exception. Sometimes Creeping Charlie will creep under the newspaper, but that doesn't bother me if it's under the newspaper.
Yes.
So, I mean, it just works out so well that I just think that, I mean, more people should do that. It's just really maintenance free, and the soil doesn't dry out as fast.
I agree.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yes.
And people have these things. They don't have to go out and look for what they're going to use for mulch. you know, just most people have newspaper and grass clippings if they've got a garden.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Yep, yeah. That's a great way, and that's if you have decent soil, that's a really good way. And you said you cover everything, but I'm guessing you don't cover your plants or the exact rows where you put your seeds.
Right, I just leave a little opening where the seeds will come up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you
go. That's a great way.
Thank you.
Okay. And the other thing, another thing that I've been doing is I've been growing my cucumbers and squash on arbors. I have some old arbors that I put out in my garden, and that way it saves the ground space, and they seem to like it just fine. Spaghetti squash, acorn squash, butternuts, all of them grow just fine on growing upright on arbors.
Yep. It also helps get some more airflow around the leaves, so you'll have less powdery mildew, and you get straight cucumbers that are clean with no mud.
Yeah, and I kind of like the look, too.
Yes, I do, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Jane.
Sure.
Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. We finally have open lines to get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Facebook comment from Ron. I was wondering about pine needles for mulch. Does it alter the pH of the soil? For years, 30 years, I've used maple leaves for mulch, and now the pH of the soil is alkaline. I was wondering if pine needles would help reverse that. Doesn't sound... Well, go ahead, comment. Yeah.
From the research I've read, pine needles will not. And I wonder, I don't know where Ron is, but I wonder if his soil was really alkaline to start with.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's mulching with them. If you're working things into the soil, that could have more effect. But if you're just putting them on top and they're naturally breaking down, they neutralize.
Email from Vin in Madison, who would like to know how you stake tomatoes in the lasagna garden. Do you put stakes in before layering, or you let the tomatoes kind of sprawl across the hay? What do you do?
Well, you can let the tomatoes sprawl across the hay. I haven't done that, but what I do is I the very first year when you put down that smother layer, that's when you don't want to make very many holes through that cardboard, because if you had creeping Charlie or quackgrass, they can come up through those holes.
Yeah.
But you have to. I end up with 7 to 10 foot tall tomato plants. Well, you could let those sprawl, but I do stake them, and I pound a stake in through the cardboard next to the tomato. So I'll plant the tomato, and within the next 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get that stake set up. And I didn't put up the picture of the complete tomato cage this time. I did it in September, but I've actually started having some sculptural tomato cages made that are 7.5 to 8 foot tall. And I have, some of those are self-supporting and some of those tie to, like a metal T-post that's 4 or 5 foot tall. And so I'll actually, the easiest, least work, it's utilitarian, but, if you put one metal T-post in and then you get, field fence or woven wire, but you needed to have big enough holes that you can reach through to pick the tomatoes.
Yeah.
Then I'll get that's 39 to 40 inches tall.
Yep.
I cut a 7 to 8 foot length of that, and then I actually stand it up so it's 7 or 8 foot tall, and I bend that into a column or a circle, tie that to the post, and have one tomato grow up the center of that. And then that works really well for those tall, for those indeterminate plants that in a lasagna garden are going to be 7 to 10 foot tall.
That's reasonably inexpensive.
Yeah,
it lasts a long time.
It lasts a long time. Yep,
because you can pull those. You can
That'll last many years. The other thing I've done is I'll put a 5 to 7 foot fence post in, the metal T post, or you can put shorter ones in and tie a branch to it that's 7 or 8 foot tall, and then run untreated twine, like sisal twine that you would tie newspaper up, or baling twine. Tie that between about every 6 inches and weave your tomatoes up through it.
Makes sense, too. On our Facebook page, you posted a shot which you call Tall Tomato Cage Bottle Tree with fruit. And what's that all about?
If people want to see the full picture, the picture of the whole thing, you can go back to the September time I was on. But so I've created working with a friend who does welding, some tomato cages that are sculptural. So this gets into making the vegetable garden more attractive. So I've created some sculptures, and a bottle tree is a southern thing where you make, whether it's wood or metal, you put glass bottles on just to add some decoration to a sculpture. And so what I've done is I've put a metal sculpture that is a bottle tree, that is a tomato cage, all in one. And then this one I put cobalt blue bottles on, which it's cobalt pretty. Blue, who can't resist cobalt blue yeah. glass? And then this is a picture of the tomato growing up around through that sculpture with the blue glass in there. And people often ask, well, if you have a 7 to 10 foot tall tomato, does it really have any fruit? So I took a picture showing that this has hundreds of little yellow. They're green, but those are going to be the sweet yellow sun gold tomatoes. And there's hundreds of them on this plant.
We are going to go to Jim in UW Stout next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you. I'm Jim Tenorio. I'm a professor in the Graphic Communications Management program here at UW-Stout.
Great.
We teach courses in printing management and printing technology. My specialty has been in the printing press area. And there were some questions about newspaper and the inks and so forth. And I've done a little checking on this myself because I had questions from some elementary school teachers about using newspapers and art projects and so forth, and there's a couple reasons why it should not be of a concern. Number one is that heavy metals have not been used in printing inks probably since the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And another reason is that newspapers and the inserts in newspapers are printed on presses that wouldn't use those kinds of dryers anyways. So the inks that are in newspapers would not even in the
heavy paper, the heavy colored papers that you find as inserts in newspaper.
Yes. The drying process doesn't need the metals that were in there years ago but aren't in there anymore. Those dry strictly by evaporation is how they dry, and so the old metal, the idea of metals being in those inks wouldn't apply to newspapers and inserts because they dry by a different process.
Thank you so much. I appreciate getting that information from someone who knows.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. So, can you use that heavy paper?
Yeah. And I want to make another comment on that concern, and I really appreciate getting someone to call in who can clarify that and clear that up. Another thing to remember, you know, like there's still some ink in there and people might wonder about that, or on. I like to use cardboard boxes, appliance boxes, and people wonder about the glues on those. And what I like to remind people, remember we started off talking about low maintenance, and I said, well, let's think about all the work we do in the garden. Well, let's think about when you buy vegetables from the grocery store. If they're conventionally growing, most of them have some pesticide residue on them. So if we put a little glue or a little ink in the garden that's in the soil that's probably maybe not even taken up by the plant, that's still chemically cleaner than what you can buy at the grocery store.
There you go. Roger Reynolds, our guest today, garden educator, as we talk with him about sustainable and low-maintenance gardening. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about sustainable and low-maintenance gardens here with our guest Roger Reynolds. Larry Mueller with you today. Glad to have you along. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment right there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Pam in Eau Claire has a question for you, Roger. So let's go there. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to put in a fairly large lasagna garden. I'm going to do it raised bed, and I'm going to need a lot of material. And, of course, I want to put some in early so I can plant peas and onions and so forth when there's not a lot of material available, for instance, grass clippings and things of that nature. Wondering if you have any suggestions on how to collect or get or what materials I should use early in the spring.
The first thing I thought of when you mentioned what you're going to do is when you install a lasagna. Now, if you get the lasagna gardening book, if all of your materials are kind of ground up, which she talks about, you can water it and in a couple days you can plant. But if you're using coarser materials that are dry, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks of watering that before you can plant. That's just one thing I thought about. You're talking about installing and planting peas. So that's just one thing to think about. Now, getting the materials, it takes a lot of material. We really need to build this 18 to 24 inches deep to start with, because once it's wet, it's going to shrink,
right,
fall in on itself by about 50% or more. So what materials, now I see you're in Eau Claire, so you have to think about, is there a city compost site? I don't know about farmers up there, and I don't know, it depends on your budget, and it depends on your strength or your helper's strength. Down here in southwest Wisconsin, in rural areas, farmers store big round bales out along the fields. If they do that for 2 to 3 years, some of those bales go bad. If you have someone to haul them, or you can get someone to haul them, you can usually get those for very little money. But if you don't have a way to get those, and you need someone also to have the strength to take them apart. So that's one thing. The leaves from an urban area, Eau Claire is a good size area. I don't know how they manage their leaves, but the compost site probably has a lot of material sitting around. Otherwise you turn to buying it. You can get little square bales or little square hay bales or little square straw bales. You need any dead plant material or livestock manure. So I don't know if there are any horse stables in the area, or if you know any farmers, you can use some manure, but it is a lot of material to get. And you may not be able to do everything this year, depending on, and you might have to wait till fall. So it's a matter of budget, time, and strength.
Mm-hmm. Well, may I ask one more question?
Sure.
The brown materials, I think I can handle. It's the green materials that I'm concerned about where to get.
There, thank you. I'm glad you clarified that. There are some materials for that nitrogen that we can buy that are pretty easy to get. And if you go again to my website, which the name of my company is called Infiltrating Landscapes. There's a pun there. I'm trying to spread the word. So it's infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com. And there I have a handout that's free to download on composting, and there's also one on lasagna gardening. Now, some of the things that people don't always think about as a nitrogen component would be, if you went to Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm or another farm store like that, chicken feed, dog food, alfalfa pellets, all of those are high in protein, and nitrogen is one of the main things that helps build proteins. So those are some things. You can also go to a farm co-op where farmers would go to buy seed or livestock feed. Soybean meal is another one. And any of the things that I mentioned, you can buy them organically or you can buy them not organic. That's your choice. So those are some other options for that. And those you would spread on. Now, you have to do a little bit of thought about the ingredients you're putting in there. But if you were doing like mostly leaves or mostly straw, I would say that the dog food, soybean meal, chicken feed, alfalfa pellets, you would do those maybe like a gallon per 100 square feet.
Hmm. There you go.
Okay. And there's going to be a garden seminar in Eau Claire this weekend, and there is a lasagna gardening
presenter
portion of that, so I might mention that also.
Yep, and that's not me. I'm not sure who's doing that.
Yeah.
I have been asked, and I'm not sure what's happening in Eau Claire. This August, they're looking, the UW Extension was looking to plan a sustainable fair, and I've been asked to do that, and I haven't heard any what the word on that is. But yeah, go ahead and mention that, and pull down my handout and take that to them. I'm happy to have that be used by everybody.
Mm-hmm. There you
Very
go.
Good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Antonio in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Antonio.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I suppose any discussion about gardening wouldn't be complete without Creeping Charlie question, and I'm trying to keep it in a sustainable context. I obviously I've got an issue with that critter all over my yard, and I'm interested in the sustainable approach to either A, address it, or eradicate it, or maybe neither. So what is your thoughts on how to do that? And then if I am going to do sustainable, concept, I'd also want to use some sort of material. I've heard of baking soda that can be used also to help, treat that, if you will. But does the sustain? I heard somebody mention that they were using newspaper and sort of the layering idea, but it seems like Creeping Charlie's a awful aggressive little sucker and can get in there or underneath it or whatever. So
can you get online? Can you get online and go to my Facebook page? Because
I can do that.
Because Roger Scott had posted some photos about Creeping Charlie and dealing with it. So.
So, the most sustainable way to deal with Creeping Charlie would be to eat it.
Yeah.
It is an edible herb. But now I heard you mention it in your lawn.
Lawn moving to the garden. And then actually that's where we're going to really cross, you know.
Yeah.
The Maginot line will be right there. That's my Babylon. I can see this right now.
Yep, exactly. So I have a picture on the Facebook page, and this is, it's a set of three. And then I had an area alongside my house where there was Creeping Charlie, and I'm guessing it was 50 to 70 square feet. It was 5 to 6 by 10 or 12 feet long. And I had Creeping Charlie there pretty heavy. So the way that you deal with it is basically you're going to smother it. No plant, and you're going to smother it with lack of light, not lack of oxygen.
Okay.
So particularly with Creeping Charlie, which is tenacious.
Yes.
I like to use cardboard and appliance boxes because like a stove or refrigerator box, you don't have as many holes or seams that you need to worry about. So with Creeping Charlie, I would recommend using corrugated cardboard. Any place where you have a break, you're going to need to overlap that probably 4 to 8 inches so the Creeping Charlie doesn't come up through.
Uh-huh.
Now, if this is a border around your garden, you could then put about 6 inches of wood mulch on that cardboard and just have that be your path that Creeping Charlie's dying below. If it's your garden, if you're doing a lasagna garden, then you could just build the layers of dead plant material and livestock manure 18 to 24 inches deep on top of this cardboard that is smothering it. And once that's watered and wet, then you can plant stuff. So you can plant flowers right on top of the dying Creeping Charlie, a little homage to the dying Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. Can you give me, I'm not sure of your Facebook page.
Go to the Larry Mueller Show.
Okay.
That's it. Just the Larry Mueller Show.
And I put 12 pictures or so up there. I put quite a few. But if you go down, there's one that says 50 to 70 square feet of Creeping Charlie gone in about an hour.
Wow.
Yes.
Again, I mean, if you did your lawn like that, that's pretty aggressive. You basically have to reseed the whole lawn and start all over at that juncture.
Right.
It's a different animal, right? I mean.
It's a different thing to deal with the lawn. Borax is one possibility, but there's a concern of getting too much borax and toxifying the ground with borax.
Kill your whole lawn, which somebody did here in Wisconsin because they put too much on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And instead of with Creeping Charlie, I know people who have literally gone in and eliminated their lawn, started all over again, and 2 years later, they got tons of Creeping Charlie because the birds bring it in and the neighbors.
The seed bank is there. It creeps in from the edges. There's all it lives well.
Yeah, it sure
strong.
Does. Sue in Sun Prairie says the Lasagna Gardening book recommends layers of peat moss in preparing levels of layers in which to plant. A friend who has a plant nursery says peat moss is bad news and should be avoided. If this is true, what do you substitute for peat? We have bags and bags of oak leaves and a barrel full of our winter kitchen scraps that we haven't put out in the compost bin yet. Lots of newspapers and periodicals.
A couple of thoughts on that. I know there's environmental the whole peat moss is bad news. That's a statement about our peat bogs being depleted is an environmental concern. And I haven't looked in depth into that, but you also notice through this period, I haven't mentioned peat moss.
Yeah.
In Lasagna Garden book, she mentions using a lot of peat moss. And from a sustainability standpoint, local is sustainable. Every municipality is either burning or piling leaves someplace. So leaves other than walnut are a really good option. And then, like I mentioned, hay or old hay if you're near a rural area. So dead plant material and leaves and old hay and old straw are abundant throughout Wisconsin.
There you go. And Karen in Black River Falls, hello.
Hello. I've heard him mention using newspaper in the garden. I have access to a lot of shredded office paper. Would that be a problem to use for your mulch rather than the newspaper on top?
You can use it. There's a couple things. I always, from a sustainability standpoint, paper is very refined.
Uh-huh.
And to me, keeping paper in the paper cycle is more energy efficient for the globe.
Okay.
So, I mean, and we have leaves everywhere that are, I mean, that are abundantly around. But office paper can be used. I don't know about the inks. I'm guessing from the professor's call earlier, again, that those aren't the inks that we're putting on office paper, as long as it's not the glossy, is not full of heavy metals. So you could use it. The thing, one thing though, that shredded paper blows easily.
Yeah. You have to watch that.
Wet, I tried some last year, and once it's wet, it turns into like paper mache.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
And it's stuck. Stays there and has done a nice job.
Yep. So
if it's just going to be tossed in a landfill anyway, I would say by all means use it.
Oh, absolutely. If it's going to the landfill, absolutely use it. If it's going to be recycled, that was my thought. But it's better than leaving the soil open.
Roger Reynolds, our guest today, garden educator and owner of Infiltrating Landscapes, his business, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Talking about sustainable and low-maintenance gardening through composting, mulching, and a whole lot more today. Larry Mueller here, my guest Roger Reynolds, innovative garden educator. He has a consulting firm called Infiltrating Landscapes. Lives in Lone Rock, Wisconsin, but works all around the place. And I'm really glad to have him with us today to talk about lasagna gardening and a whole lot more. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or please go to my Facebook page. He's posted many, many photos, as have now several listeners. Who've got a lot to look at there. So I hope you'll join in. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show for that. And Roger, you're going to be in person at the Garden Expo. I'll be there too on February 10th. And Judith will be there too, by the way. We'll be there February 10th. I think we've got a little presentation at 10 o'clock in the morning. I do with Shelley Ryan. And then at 11, Judith and I will be at our booth, our Wisconsin Public Radio booth. But I know you're going to be doing a demonstration there.
Is Saturday the 10th or is Saturday the 11th?
Saturday might be the 11th. I think you're right.
You're there on Saturday.
I'm there on Saturday, yes. Whatever that day is.
Yes. And I'm there. Yep. I'm there doing a number of workshops. On Friday night, I'm going to talk about tomato blight.
Friday night the 10th.
Yep, yeah. Friday night. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then building your own worm bin is a hands-on workshop for people. On Saturday, I'm giving four different talks. The tomato blight prevention again, lasagna gardening, and then vegetable gardening 101. So for beginners, for starting with vegetables. And then the last one was one that's kind of fun, is energy efficient landscape design. So looking at some ways that your landscape can actually help cool or warm your house, and then other things about the landscape. And then on Sunday, I'm doing two hands-on workshops, one in the morning, leaf printing. So that printing on t-shirts, using leaves, printing with acrylic paint and also bleaching technique. And then in the afternoon, a workshop on growing microgreens and sprouts.
And you brought some today, and there, I have to admit here that during the course of the program, I have eaten about a half a plateful of some wonderful sprouts. And a really nice variety.
Yep, and that's what I have a lot of things growing at home right now for that workshop on a little over a week on Sunday. So I want to show that we can actually do some gardening for our food in our homes in the winter.
And you did post a photo of basically what you brought in today, and it's really very good. Really very good. And you know what? We're going to give away some tickets. Let's do that. If you'd like to win a pair of tickets to Garden Expo, and again, it takes place next weekend, Friday, February 10th, then the 11th and 12th, Saturday and Sunday in Madison, you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And here's what you need to include. You need to include your first and last name, the city or town where you live, the name of your favorite Garden Talk guest, and the first five people who do all that will get a pair of one-day tickets to Garden Expo. The tickets will be at the Will Call booth. We'll have them for you, but you'll be able to get them. So your name, city and town where, first and last name, city and town where you live, name of your favorite Garden Talk guest, and the first five people who can email that in to talk@wpr.org will get a pair of tickets.
Very nice.
Yeah, very nice. So, Judith, get ready for the onslaught.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure there are going to be lots of emails coming in right now. Dan in Merrimack, we're going to turn to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Roger. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Hey, last year we had a spectacular garden. Everything worked out just fine, except... And we have the garden surrounded by chicken wire to keep out most of the critters.
Yeah.
However, either the voles, the shrews, or the moles really, really liked our cucumbers. How do I train cucumbers to climb up a trellis?
Oh, that's easy. They can go straight up, but what I like to do is whether you use a cattle panel, the cattle or... pig panels from
yep.
Those are great. Those are heavy duty, but it'll also work on a heavier field fence or welded wire, woven wire. But what I like to do is I like to put that at about an 80 degree angle, so not
okay.
straight up, but tilted at about 70 to 80 degrees. Plant the cute, and so I like to have that pointing towards the south if at all possible, because plants grow towards the light. And then I'll plant my cucumbers a foot to a foot and a half to the north of the bottom of that panel, because that first foot to foot and a half isn't going to make any fruit.
Right.
Mm.
And you want a panel, you want to use some wire that has big enough holes, because what I do when I do this is then they start growing up that, and they're going to grow at least 4 foot up that, as long as you don't get powdery mildew or the mosaic virus. Watch when the cucumbers are forming, and as long as you get them to fall through a hole, you'll have a nice straight cucumber. It won't have any mud on it, and it'll hang down there. And unless it's some rodent that climbs up there and does a little acrobatics, you should be pretty safe. So at a little bit of an angle off of straight, they'll grow up really nice.
Oh, that sounds great, because we had great cucumbers, but we didn't get too many because they liked them better than we did,
yeah.
apparently.
One thing I forgot, you need to put a couple fence posts on the upside of that, because the weight of those cucumbers coming up is you need to support that.
Yep.
Yeah,
it'll work
great. I've got plenty of T-posts. So.
That'll do it. Good luck.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Facebook question from Nathan. Enjoying the show. I'm a small self-employed landscaper. Have been incorporating more and more food items into my designs. Can you talk a bit about your favorite landscape? Your favorite attractive food plantings for landscaping?
All right. I'm going to break that into a couple categories, because first there's annuals. So there's a lot of different peppers. One of my favorite catalogs is Tomato Growers Supply.
Mm.
And they have a lot of different peppers. So peppers just are really beautiful as they're maturing in the garden. Of course, the colored Swiss chard is really beautiful. That's common. Then another favorite catalog of mine is Johnny's Select Seeds. And Seed Savers is also good. But Johnny's Select Seeds has a really fun annual green. It's called edible amaranth or red leaf amaranth. And Jamaicans call it callaloo. And it's an amaranth or pigweed plant. But it looks a lot like coleus, but it'll grow in full sun.
Mm-hmm. And callaloo is really good.
Yeah, callaloo is very good. It's good. There's Jamaica has callaloo soup here, a Jamaican restaurant in Madison. Then you can get into the woody shrubs. So I really like elderberry, hazelnut's another one. Those are just some off the top of my head. But I think one person who's written probably the best books is, I think it's Rosalind Creasy. Her last name is C-R-E-A-S-Y or S-E-Y. But if you do some searches for books with unedible landscaping, that's where you'll get to see some of these. Grapes can be trained on different kinds of trellises. In one of her books, she talks about certain grapes, you can grow a stem straight up, put a hoop around it, and it almost looks like kind of a weeping willow.
Huh?
So you have a straight up stem or a palm tree.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of different. So her books are probably my best recommendation.
We had a Facebook comment from Inga, who says, thanks to Roger, we had an abundant supply of fresh vegetables for the Bethel Boutique. Food pantry in Westby, and plan to expand the garden after the community garden spots this year. Started with training by Roger.
Yes, and so this is the place, I couldn't remember the name, in Westby, Wisconsin, Bethel Boutique, which is a thrift store and food pantry on the northeast side of Westby. And February 25th at 10 a.m., we will be doing a training there.
And a Facebook question from Pat, will these gardening techniques work in New Mexico?
I don't know why not.
Yeah, why not?
Right. These will work around the world. All of the plants that we grow for food or ornament, their parents are native someplace. And every plant evolved with mulched soil. So because nature doesn't till the soil except for maybe pigs. And so you'll have to, that's why I like to say we need dead plant material or livestock manure. Now, other than some very sparse deserts, every part of the world has dead plant material. And some animals making manure. So as long as you can, now in New Mexico, I might go deeper, and it's going to, because you're in an arid, if you get into the arid New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, into that more arid area, I might go deeper and you might have coarser material on top. Now, if you're into an area with palm trees, I might actually lay down whole palm fronds on the very top, because what that coarse material does, it stops the wind. So you stop that air evaporation, mm-hmm. and its stuff doesn't get hit by the sun the same. So you might have to do a little bit different, go a little deeper to have a bigger wet sponge, a little more, the coarse layer on top would be more important. But in an arid area, you'll really reduce your watering needs, and it'll grow great. I'm on 160-foot deep sand in the Wisconsin River Valley, and I'm now where people typically water their garden once or twice a day, even if it rains. I water once a week to once a month.
Yeah. Quite a difference.
Yeah.
Linda emailed and wondered if you'd explain tree frog barrels you've created. And we have some photos of them up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Talk about those for a bit.
So this is part of a sustainable garden, a natural garden, an organic garden, and working with nature. So I build a fence to keep rabbits, groundhogs, and deer out of my garden because they're going to eat what I want to eat. But there's pictures on the Facebook page. And so I took two 55-gallon metal barrels. You could use plastic, but I have some concerns about plastic leaching into the water and possibly affecting the amphibian growth cycle. So I used metal. They were actually food-grade containers. And then I fill them with water. I let them sit out in the sun because I had put cloth around them to decorate them the first year, make them a little prettier. But the tree frogs actually need warmer water to complete their maturing cycle through the summer. So I put actually water hyacinth and water lily plants on top just for fun to have a little.
Sure.
Water hyacinth and water lettuce. I'm sorry. You could put a water lily in there. Our native tree frogs come and lay their eggs in usually June. And then what I do is once a week I'll use a hose. Once or twice a week I'll siphon about a third to half of the water out of there. So I have to do some water changes. And then what the tree frogs eat, they'll eat the algae that's growing on the plant roots and on the side of the barrel inside there. And then when they start to get a little bigger after they hatch out of the eggs, I just pick broccoli, lettuce, spinach, maple leaves, leaves that we could eat. So, and we can eat from a maple tree or a birch tree. So I wouldn't use oak leaves or I wouldn't use walnut leaves. And I kind of crunch them up and throw them in there. And as those start to break down, the tadpoles eat those. When they get to be about a month old, they need protein. And you can give them fish flakes or I'll actually put a chunk of cod or some fish from the freezer, put a chunk in there, and they attack it because they're to the point where they're needing protein. Yeah. And then I'll put a couple little goldfish in there, really little, so they can't eat the tadpoles, and they will eat mosquito larvae and mosquito eggs. And so we're not increasing the mosquito population. We're actually decreasing it a little bit. And then as those frogs come out, they're insect control in my garden. And it's pretty fun.
Well, we've got some photos up of it, and it does look like fun. So there you have it. We are going to turn to Terry in Chippewa Falls. Been waiting a while. Let's go there. Hi, Terry. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. I was just wondering, with the coffee grounds in the mulch, is that good? Or
yes.
Can you add too much? Or
well, unless you're vibrating on coffee, you probably couldn't get too much coffee grounds. If you're getting you always have to give things, you have to give some thought to this. And if you look at my composting handout from my website, it talks there about coffee grounds. Coffee grounds are a nitrogen ingredient, but I wouldn't do them if you're building up a lasagna garden. I would say if coffee grounds were, 10 to 15% of that total, that would probably be okay. But I wouldn't have them up to the 25 to 50%.
Hard to imagine getting it up to 25 or 50% anyway.
You'd have to have a 4-foot by 4-foot bed and be getting them from coffee stores.
Yeah.
Coffee house.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go, Terry. Thank you very much for calling. Judith says, please end the contest. We had all kinds of emails. Yeah. We have some winners. Where are you posting them? Have you posted the winners somewhere? On Yahoo? Got them on Yahoo? Okay.
On Facebook.
We'll find them. We'll find them somewhere here. I bet she's got them right here. Yeah, here they are. Vin M. in Madison. Rick B. in New Berlin. Julie W. in Sun Prairie. Vicky M. in Adel. And Dawn A. in Oshkosh. And people's favorite Garden Talk guests, lots of for Shelley Ryan, Melinda Myers, also quite a few for Roger here. And including this one, says, favorite is Roger. Hi, Roger. Love you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's nice to hear.
All right. So those are our winners. And by the way, to get those, we'll have your name at the will call desk and so at the expo. So just go to the will call, and you will get your tickets. Great to do that. And thanks so much for everybody who tried to get in. And want to know, from Linda wants to know, I should say, from River Falls, wondering what kind of perennial flowers would integrate well into a lasagna garden. The perennials would preferably be low maintenance and indigenous, to Western Wisconsin.
Well, I'm not an expert on natives, and I would say do some research, contact a couple different native nurseries to get some suggestions there. But one of the ideas that came about from our show in September here was perennials in the center of a lasagna garden, because. And that makes a lot of sense, and I'll explain this a little more. I'm getting ahead of myself. In a lasagna garden or anything, if you get it weed-free or even a bare soil garden, once you get it weed-free, creeping charlie, quack grass, nut sedge, some of those things that creep in, it's the edges where things will creep in. So if you can do annuals or some border along the edge where if you need to put down another smother layer 2 or 3 years later to stop some creeping charlie, you can do it. So if you have something that's 10 foot by 10 foot or bigger, put some perennials in the center and put some annuals along the edge, and then your perennials will always be weed free because you can always re-smother that edge layer. So that, and somebody, one of the callers said they put rhubarb in the center, which made great sense. But the other thing with perennials is in the book, Patricia Lanza talks about putting perennials in a lasagna garden. To me, that doesn't make sense. I want perennials I want that root crown in the ground so that it's protected through winter and I don't have to put some mulch on, but not too much to protect it every winter. So I would put perennials in the ground, have them more centered so you can still do a smother layer on the edge if you need to, and any perennial will be fine. And then if when you bring in new mulch every year, you just don't cover up the perennials, you just mulch close to them.
There we go. We had an email from Virginia. Last fall, I put about 18 inches of just dry grass or hay, thinking it would decay. Also had a few food scraps. Well, we don't have any snow. It's not going to be ready to plant. What do I add now? I also had some meat scraps. I didn't know if I was supposed to do, you know, what to do with that.
Yeah. Meat scraps in the lasagna garden, if you put them really deep, meat will decompose. It's from nature. It's from animals. But it needs to be 12 to 18 inches down and from both sides, otherwise animals smell it. So that's why you're told not to put it in a small compost pile. Now, one of the things is we don't need all of this material to be broken down before we plant in it. We actually don't want it broken down. This is not a compost pile. This is a lasagna garden. This is a really slow compost pile. We don't want it all broken down before we plant into it. We only need it all wet. So we're still going to get some rain. We may get snow. It's not time to plant yet. I think she was from Eau Claire, so it's certainly not time to plant there yet.
No.
So when things start to thaw out, we're getting to the end of February, beginning of March, reach down in there, check it in five or six places, and dig all the way down. If it's mostly wet, you're okay. If it's not wet and things have thawed out, put a sprinkler on it once a week or a couple times 1 week and then put it away so your hoses don't freeze. But you still have time to get it wet. You don't need it broken down. Mm-hmm. You just need it wet through and through.
There we go. We have a suggestion from Eric who says, we have a great success trellising tomato plants, melons, and squash with 4 by 6 foot cattle panels from Farm and Fleet. We cut them into 2 7.5 foot long sections and then wire them back together so the two panels can stand in A-frame fashion. They're incredibly strong, can be used year after year. Michelle and I made ours at least 6 years ago, and they still look brand new. Cattle panels can also be simply T-stocked with 4 foot walls.
Yep. Yes, I know Eric and Michelle, and part of their panels look new because they're also in their greenhouse, but they're galvanized, so they last a long, long time. And that A-frame works well. You could do them side by side, maybe a foot apart, and have tomatoes grow up between them. Yeah, I like cattle panels a lot. They're inexpensive, and they're really strong. You can also bend them into a hoop or an arch.
So there you go. So now in this last, I'm starting to run out of time here, so maybe in this last minute, you can remind us about where your workshops are, where you're going to be talking, and so forth.
Yep. So at Garden Expo, which is coming up next weekend here in Madison, and then at Oldbrook, I'm doing a few classes. I'm doing Sprouts and Greens one night, February 20th. Then March 3rd is that day-long class that's going to be all about sustainable mulch gardens and edible landscaping, some of it on organics, on tomato blight prevention. February 25th in Westby, Wisconsin, a workshop on lasagna gardening. Saturday the 10th of March in Monroe. And then also one thing I didn't mention, at UW Research Gardens on the west side out by Menards, mm-hmm. we're going to be installing a demonstration lasagna garden there. And there'll be a workshop both for installation and a workshop for planting, and that'll be April into May.
Wow. So you have lots going there.
Yes.
And then again, you can find it all out at your website, I'm
yes.
sure.
Yes. Yep.
And the website, you can find that at my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, or just want to give that again. Why?
Yep. So the name of my company is Infiltrating Landscapes, like water soaking into the ground. So Infiltrating Landscapes, or ideas going out across the landscape. So Infiltrating Landscapes. And if you do a search for Infiltrating Landscapes and throw in Roger, it should come up.
It's gonna pop up.
But infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com.
Okay. There you go. Thank you, Roger. You'll come back?
Absolutely.
Roger Reynolds, his consulting firm, Infiltrating Landscapes. He does a great job, and we definitely will get him back, and we'll do this again. Thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.